Thank you for listening to Weekly Wisdom, the podcast of First Presbyterian Church in Haddonfield, New Jersey. This episode is a sermon preached by Reverend Marvin Lindsay on Easter Sunday, 2024. It's based on Mark's account of the resurrection of Jesus. And in this sermon, Reverend Lindsay focuses on what the women's fear and silence at the end of the gospel mean for us today as we explore the meaning of the resurrection. We hope that you'll enjoy this podcast.
Today is Easter, but Monday was Tolkien Reading Day. Did you know that? Did anyone observe Tolkien Reading Day on Monday? One geek in the choir who's closely related to me. So. Two geeks down in the Chancel area. Tolkien Reading Day, if you don't know, is in honor of J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. So, again, if you're online and you observe Tolkien Reading Day, happy belated Tolkien Reading Day to all who observe. For those of you who don't observe, I'm going to tell you a little bit about his two most famous novels. Spoilers abound, but you know, if you haven't read Tolkien yet, then you really should have read it by now, so I don't feel too sorry for spoiling it for you. In The Hobbit, there's this little fellow named Bilbo Baggins, and he accompanies a wizard named Gandalf and a company of dwarves to the Lonely Mountain, where they slay a dragon and they fight an army of goblins. And along the way, Bilbo comes into possession of a ring, and he discovers when he puts on the ring, it makes him invisible. Now, later in The Lord of the Rings, much later in the time sequence of the story, Bilbo is a much older hobbit, and his adventuring days are over, so he decides to retire and write his memoirs. Bilbo struggles with getting started, but he knows how the story will end, and they lived happily ever after to the end of their days. And that's why we're here today, right? To hear the happy ending of the gospel. On Friday, they nailed Jesus to a cross. On Saturday, his body lay dead in the tomb. Today, we hear the good news that Jesus Christ is alive. But, first, a word of clarification. According to a New Testament scholar at Pittsburgh Seminary named Tucker Furta, a happy ending is what we would have gotten from Mark if he had ended this gospel one verse shorter than he ended it. Verses 6 and 7 go like this. Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He's not here. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he's going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you. If Mark had stopped there, that would be a happy ending. The tomb is empty, not because of grave robbers, but because Jesus has been resurrected, and a rendezvous with the risen Christ awaits you. Thanks be to God, and they lived happily ever after. But that's not where Mark ends his gospel. There's one more verse he writes, and this verse is rather unsettling and disconcerting. Verse 8 reads, so they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. The empty tomb and the promise of meeting Christ alive don't fill the women's hearts with joy and with anticipation. They're frightened. And in Mark's gospel, this is important to note, the opposite of faith isn't doubt. The opposite of faith is fear. So that's a pretty strong indictment of these three women. What is more, their amazement may be more than just a brush with the supernatural. The Greek word for amazement and wonder here is ekstasis, which literally means taking leave of one's senses. It's where we get the English word ecstasy from. Mark's gospel ends with the three women out of their minds, with bewilderment and distrust, running as hard as they can away from their mission to tell the 11 disciples that Jesus is alive, and to meet him in Galilee. Now, there's some similarities with where Mark ends his gospel and the climax of Tolkien's novel, The Lord of the Rings. The magic ring that Tolkien obtained in his adventures in the Bilbo obtained in his adventures in The Hobbit, he obtained them from this little weird dude named Gollum. I mean, if you've seen the movies, I can't describe him any other way than that. The ring turns out to be the ring of power, an evil ring that was forged by the wicked Lord Sauron in the fires of Mount Doom. Sarah has been laying low while the ring has been hidden, but now that it's resurfaced, Sarin arises to search for this most potent and powerful weapon of his so that he can conquer Middle Earth and submit all the free peoples of that land to his domination. What happens is this ring passes from the hands of Bilbo into Frodo's hands, Frodo Baggins, Bilbo's nephew, and when it's discovered what the true identity of the ring is, they have a council. And it's decided that even though the ring is powerful, we can't use its power to combat Sauron because its power is too evil and too corrupting. So instead, a company, a fellowship is formed of hobbits and men and an elf and a dwarf, and they set out on a mission to sneak into Sauron's realm and throw the ring back into the volcanic fires out of which it was forged in order to destroy the ring. And they get pretty far. Frodo and his friend Sam get all the way into a lava cone. Did we talk about that in the children's sermon? Yeah, they go into a tunnel right in the middle of Mount Doom, and Frodo gets right up to the edge of the lava, and he's ready to throw the ring into the fires, and then the evil power of the ring breaks his will. He succumbs to its power, and he says, "I've decided not to destroy the ring. I've decided to keep it for myself." But just then, Gollum, who's been hot on the heels of Frodo and Sam because he wants the ring back for himself, attacks Frodo. He seizes the ring, and he is overjoyed that he, after many years, has been reunited with his precious ring. But in his joy, he dances and he slips, and he falls into the lava, and both he and the ring are destroyed. Frodo fails. The main character of The Lord of the Rings fails. Nevertheless, his mission succeeds, if by accident. His mission succeeds and Middle-earth is saved. But not really by accident. As Jack Butler writes in a National Review article, something from outside the story seems to be at work within the story, unbeknownst to the characters, that is driving the story toward a good and just and joyful resolution. Gandalf once told Frodo that he had a suspicion that Gollum would play some role in the ring's destruction, and both Bilbo and Frodo had opportunities to do away with Gollum at some point, but both spared Gollum. If it were not for these seemingly imprudent acts of mercy extended to Gollum, and if it were not for Gollum's own carelessness in his moment of triumph, then Sauron would have been reunited with this dark, magical object, and Middle-earth would have been destroyed. But as it is, Middle-earth was saved. Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James the Younger, and Salome were part of a fellowship that were on a mission following Jesus throughout the lands of Galilee and Judea. Mark tells us that these three women were very important. They were, in fact, the chief benefactors of Jesus' mission. They were putting up Jesus and the disciples, paying for their food and lodging while they went from town to town to preach the good news and to heal the sick. Unlike the 12 disciples, though, the women stick with Jesus until the very end. Of those 12 disciples, one of them betrayed Jesus to the authorities. One of them, the chief disciple, denied any association with Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times to save his own skin. The other 10 fled and went into hiding when Jesus was arrested. The women alone stood by Jesus in his hour of grief and kept vigil with him as he expired on the cross. And yet, though they followed him every step of the way, even to the cross, though they followed farther than anyone else, at the end, they couldn't take the last appointed step on the journey to tell the disciples that he'd been raised and to keep their appointment in Galilee to meet him. They, like Frodo, failed, but not because they were overwhelmed by evil, but because they were overwhelmed by good. The good news stupefied them. Jesus is alive. that battered corpse that we saw just the day before has been freed from death and decay for all eternity. And this news drives them from the tomb in fear and in terror. Why? Why is good news so frightening? There was a classic book written 50 years or so ago by Ernest Becker titled The Denial of Death. And he argues that we human beings invest in what he calls immortality projects to manage our anxiety about dying. For instance, we strive in our careers to build a legacy for ourselves that we hope will outlive our encounter with the Reaper. Or we self-medicate our anxiety with drugs or with alcohol or with hedonistic pursuits because we dying human beings feel just a little bit more alive when we're experiencing pleasure. As a society, we invest enormous sums of money into a healthcare industry that tries to combat and treat and cure all of those diseases that are doing the Reaper's bidding on a daily basis, as well as investing in law enforcement and military and judicial apparatuses that keep our bodies safe and intact from bad actors among us, to say nothing of the money that we invest in plastic surgery, in exercise equipment, in personal trainers to slow down the aging process or to make the aging process look like it's going a little more slowly. And many of these investments that we make are useful. I'm grateful for modern medicine and for first responders that are responsible for peace and public order, and even for my running shoes, which haven't gotten much use lately, which I try to stay one step ahead of the Reaper when I step out and go for a run. But here's the thing. All of these projects eventually fail. All of these investments don't return the kind of returns that we're hoping for and dreaming about. But there is an immortality project that succeeds. God's project in raising Jesus Christ from the dead. Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome and we as well, we don't receive that good news of God's immortality project as good because the news confronts them and it confronts us as well with the futility of much of what we do and of much of where we invest our time and energy. The good news also confronts them and us with a power that is stronger than both our projects and our institutions and the great power of death that we have erected these projects and institutions against, which will eventually cause these projects and institutions to crumble and fail. Wouldn't the one who, though wiser and more compassionate than we, is essentially like us, and that we share the same faith, wouldn't that one now frighten us with his power to subvert that faith? Despite the women's silence, word gets out eventually, right? I mean, we've heard the good news. That's why we're here today. How? How did it get out? Did the women, stupefy with fright, finally come to their senses and then fulfill their task and go to the 11 and go to meet Jesus in Galilee? Well, again, Dr. Perda says it's not so much a matter of the women coming to their senses as it is a matter of the risen Christ going to meet them and going to meet the disciples. In Matthew's gospel, the women are running down the road and Jesus meets them on the road. And he says, greetings. And his voice and his presence injects joy into their fear. In John's gospel, Jesus passes through locked doors, doors that are locked because the disciples are afraid of who is out on the other side. And he says, peace be with you. And the disciples rejoice. Their grief, their fear is washed away in an avalanche of joy. In Luke's gospel, the risen Christ joins two grief-stricken disciples along a road. They don't recognize him while they're walking and talking, but they invite him in for dinner. And at the table, he takes bread, and he blesses it, and he breaks it, and he gives it to them. And then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. And their grief is transformed into joy. And they go and tell the disciples. Now, Mark doesn't tell us any of these stories. He leaves us with a cliffhanger. Perhaps to make this point, just as the risen Christ turned their fear into joy outside the bounds of the story that he's telling, so too, something outside the stories that we're writing with the way we live our daily lives is at work within our stories to bring our lives and our world to a joyful conclusion. To paraphrase Bilbo, we will live happily ever after the end of our days, despite, not because of our vanity projects, and despite our weaknesses in the face of evil. Happiness is too trivial a word for it. The better word is joy, and that joy is Jesus Christ, whom God raised from the dead. That is what we have to look forward to. In the name of the one who is, and who was, and who is to come. Amen.
Thanks for listening. Please rate and review this podcast so that we can reach more people with the good news of Jesus Christ. To support our ministry, go to www.haddonfieldpres.org and click on the Give tab at the top of the page. Grace and peace be with you.